same thing you told us about atrazine. He's waiting to wait to see for sure that there's time enough to lapse that there isn't harmful.
So Perry will straighten me out on this, right?
You can't really argue with that. No, I don't want to take that position, then. If you take that position, you never change anything.
That's right.
Actually, 1938. On a commercial scale. Actually, there was AI in research labs and that sort of thing. But in 1938, it was when it became commercial. And this is what I did.
Okay, so then you see I have, and then we start our co-op, but it isn't artificial insemination. Brock County Breeders, yeah, it is artificial insemination. We started ours in 1938. And then,
That's when 38 is when the New Jersey one was started.
Yeah, they started 3 months before us, we were the second.
And who was the prime mover behind that?
Well, it was Dr. Wayne Munn, who was the president of the Wisconsin Guernsey Breeders Association. He was a Janesville doctor. And
medical doctor?
Yeah. And cattle was his avocation. And he got together my father, Lon Markham, Walter Craig, George Conway, and Fred Eddy, and they incorporated and started. And then he sort of fell by the wayside. As Amos says, Dr. Munn was a great one for starting things. But I didn't put that in the book. But
what his background was that he picked that up?
Well, as president of the Wisconsin Guernsey Breeders Association,
no.
I suppose he would have heard about Amos Perry?
They were against AI in those days.
Well, I don't know. He's long dead. So I don't know where he picked it up. But he certainly was persuasive enough that
That's amazing, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was right up to date because Perry was right on the ball.
That's Perry, P-E-R-R-Y. Yes. Okay, well, I can get a hold of that.
Actually, there's two books, but the latest one is the best.
Okay, then here's the... Then I tell Amos's background and how excited he gets about improving cattle. Does this jumper bull bit come okay with you, the ones with the men that come around with the bulls?
I think so. Sure, they happen pretty much that way, I'd say.
Yeah.
And of course you never knew what quality bull you were getting.
Or what disease you
were getting. Or what diseases. Diseases of jumper bulls too. And of course, as Amos pointed out, the jumper bull men had it made. They didn't, the farmers would pay for the feed and board their bulls, and then they didn't end up selling the bulls for meat. It was a good job. Well, let's see. Where did I put in about the, oh, here it is. Here was, so this is all wrong then. Up until Amos's arrival, the vets have been gathering semen without the aid of an artificial vagina. Okay, then this is all wrong. They go into the cow's vagina.
Which feels do, but they can do that too.
But they can go through the rectum too?
No.
Oh. They wouldn't have been doing that in 1938, but would they, John?
Well, I've got it all on tape from years ago, and I'll go and look at those transcriptions again, because it's certainly inaccurate as far as maybe they would deflect the bull, but without an artificial vagina, and then just try to gather it as it came out?
No. This is the massage method.
Okay, tell me the massage method.
Well, just the way
I don't understand it at all.
Just about the way you got it.
You wouldn't do it, you'd go down to the scrotum.
No. That's
okay.
To be removed.
Tell me what needs to be.
Feeling to the rectum.
It felt wrong to me, and yet I didn't know what was right. And it seemed to me interesting enough that you can omit things, but I like to put in the things that are interesting. And it's part of the history. If they did do artificial insemination from the time of Christ on, you know, how did they do it?
One other article, I'll try to find it, I'll send it to you. It's one I wrote about 1976 when ABS was honored for something. It was kind of a history of AI and a history of ABS. But I couldn't find that earlier.
Well, I'll try to lay my hands on a copy of that.
Okay. Let me see what other questions I had there while we're... Was it always called Proved Sire and not Proven Sire?
Remember? Because that preceded me, how they, but I think proved was usually the word they used, wasn't it? ED?
ED, yeah. But I realized that I was using...
The ABS terminology, I think it was always called proven sire.
Mm-hmm. Because I think when I dedicated a book to my father, I said a proven sire.
I think... Both correct, but I think ABS always called
okay,
it...
Okay, ABS called it that.
Proved sire, yeah.
Well, you know, I didn't realize when I called the Jersey breeders that this is probably, it wouldn't be his article, but it has, that's the American Dairy Cattle Club, but that's got the Mount Hope indexes. So, okay, I haven't heard from them. So there was that one, and then here was, got that figured out?
Yeah.
How it works?
Wearing a rubber glove, the bed goes into the bull's rectum, feels through the rectal wall, and gently massages an internal gland to the bull's of my mild orgasm and the scene of gravity train. Catches
I figured
semen.
He couldn't do a bolt. If he's
right.
Got one arm up the bull, he can hardly be down below catching the semen.
Right. Companion catches it with the sheep, and then the vet that lets us go to be back in place.
That's how it's right. Well, there's a good bit help. Okay, that's how the drainage works. Then let's see. That's part one, part two, part three. We've worked on quite a bit. I asked about quotes from the Black Book, and I've got a lot of changes and additions here, but what I'll do is I will send this off to you guys. Some of those I read you. Some were just refinement, especially using this calendar with names and when things happened. But I was fortunate enough to have in my papers when I got going through them that gives the dates. And then,
just the 20th anniversary one?
Yeah. And somewhere, I'm sure I've seen my father's talk, but at the time, you see, the longer I've worked on this, the more, if I find something, I see where it fits. And I hate to think of what I lost at the start by not knowing and being able to make the connections. But that talk is somewhere, and I'm now going through a lot of stuff, and I don't really have a deadline except that they've been waiting a long time now, and I don't want them just to say they're not going to do it. What questions did I have on them? Well, I think just whatever changes. Oh, here's the ova transplant. See, this wouldn't be. Well, here's what Raymer says, and this isn't. Raymer was the farm editor, and he wrote up this stuff, and he must have gotten most of it from my father, unless he came and... Here it says, Raymer tells of Dr. Willett's work with inducing cows to produce as many as 27 ova in a cow's reproduction period instead of the usual one. Now, are those ova or are those embryos?
That's ova.
By injecting female hormones from the pituitary glands of sheep. And then I'm quoting directly from the article. Then comes the hardest part, which requires taking super ovulated eggs from the blue-blooded donor cow in a surgical operation, which then kills the donor, right?
Well, then, at that point.
Well, maybe the eggs, just removing eggs, he didn't have to do surgically, did he?
But did they know how to do that yet? Transplanting them to the scrub foster mothers and fertilizing them by artificial insemination. The hope is to arrive at a technique which will make the surgery unnecessary. It doesn't seem to fit, does it? Where'd you get it in 1950? What's he taking? He's taking, if Willett can get 27 ova, and take them out.
How would he have extracted them that time?
Pardon?
How would he have obtained the...
Well, if he killed, if he could have killed a cow and then flushed out the bull into it. But then he'd have to get that back into a bull.
Just a sidelight on this, and I don't know if it's absolutely true, but I came across this story when I was trying to clear up this thing with the university. And Jerry Larson, who was later manager at Tri-State, told me this part because he'd worked in the lab then, that the day they got they collected the semen, or the egg from the scalp, and they got it, and Willett had it in the little plastic dish here, and he was walking through the lab, or back to wherever they're going to put it, and he stubbed his toe or something on a board there and fell. And it fell on the floor there, on the wooden floor. And he was so mad, I guess he must have had a bit of a temper, I don't.
Yes.
And he stormed in his office, slammed the door shut. And so these technicians noticed what happened. So they went over, scraped the top off the floor, and then proceeded again. But he was so mad at that, it never would have happened. But they scraped it back up to the floor, and they went ahead and transferred the egg, and that's how the first one was born.
Oh, is that a story I can tell? That's wonderful. That's wonderful. But I'm still a little worried about this business here, where...
Let me get the original article, and then... No, don't worry about it, newspaper. Let's get the original article, and I'll get them to you.
Okay. Yeah, because this is probably through Dad and through Raymond.
Yeah.
I mean, from Willett or from whoever he's talking to, other than ABS or at Wispy, and then through my father to Raymond to the public, and it's bound to have mistakes. Okay, good.
I don't even remember the 27.
Well, that's the number that was in here.
I don't remember the number 27.
No, that's the first I've ever heard of that.
Well, we can always cut these things out. That's
we'll look up the original article and see what it says.
But I don't know that I ever saw those articles, so I wasn't feel like
I remember, I can see it in front of me, but I can't remember the number 27. No. I don't know.
See, I've probably got it underlined here. Let's see, it doesn't seem to be...
I trust you. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Let's
okay.
I know you couldn't dream up 27 hours of thin air.
For another reason, right? Okay, well, you men have been wonderful, and I don't want to keep you any longer, but...
Yeah, I really need to get going.
Where's your daughter now, the granddaughter who... Ron's granddaughter, who was at the 50th.
She's still living at the house there, but she really needs to get off on her own and have her own place and so forth. And she's finding it harder and harder to be there with Dad because with his failing memory, he'll tell her the same things a dozen, well, he does it to me too.
Uh-huh.
And she has to keep, she finds it very hard to be with him. She says, I come to school and teach my students and have a rough time. And she said, and then I come home to Grandpa. And even though I love him, she said, there's just no rest. He's at me and at me
so
and at
what,
me. And
what does she teach then?
She teaches
she teach?
High school English in Delavan Darien.
Oh, I see.
High school. Uh-huh. And so as we speak, she's probably up in Madison thinking about trying, you know, she's thinking, she says, I need a life. She's had some unfortunate love affairs, and she's a beautiful young woman. But she's 29, and she expects, she had expected to, you know, be married and have a good relationship and perhaps a child by now. She's wanted those things, and she's not going to get them living in Beloit with Dad. And so this trip, I said, well, I really agree, Ellie, that, you know, that you should move. And not worry about Grandpa. I said, that's our worry, us four. And we'll, you know, he's able to get along so far, and we have, somebody comes in every day, makes his lunch. I mean, he can take care of himself pretty well.
It might have been under research conditions.
And make his lunch and so forth and all. And I'm up about once a month or once every 6 weeks or so. Working on this book all these years, of course, has been tremendous incentive, but also I feel responsible. And
are there other children besides you?
Yeah, I have a sister here in Madison, but she doesn't come down very often, although just this past year she's really taken over the finances because Dad struggles with the books, but he can't figure them out well enough now. And so Joe has been handling that. And so it's sad because he's been so sharp. And I did tell you the funny story about Posthumus, didn't I? I think you laughed hard at that, or I told Matt or somebody. I didn't tell John because I didn't talk to him. When Northwestern took this book, a year and a half or whenever it was ago, I was up at the farm. After that, and Dad said to me, he would have been 90 or 91 at the time. 90, he would have been. And he said, you see, I've been working on this for so many years. And he said, when did you say this was going to get published? And I said, well, I've got to finish it yet, and that's going to take me at least another year. And I said, and then once they get the manuscript, it's going to take them at least a year to edit it and publish it. And so I said, at the very least, it's going to be 2 more years. Which, of course, I knew was too little. And he said, well, he said, I'm afraid it's going to be a posthumous book. And I said, oh, come on, Dad, you can manage to live for a couple more years. And he said, I didn't mean me.
Wow.
And even with him losing his memory, he's aware of it, and it wasn't too long ago that he said, oh, he says, so many things to remember, he said, and I've only got 2 ears to scratch.
Well, how are we doing on the things you need to get something checked on?
Well, I think my working methods are a bit messy, although I seem to come out fine at the end. We'd none of us know where the Little Bulls article came from, right? Bob Woodard's Little Bulls?
You didn't read that one. Did you recognize it at all, Matt?
No, I didn't.
I'd love to stick it in because it's so funny.
Here it is, Sean. See if that rings a bell for you at all. I don't remember.
And in 1966, so it falls within my time period.
It's the two Charlie Bulls you're up. And Ray Woodward, apparently. I think you spoke to Ray, and he didn't know.
He didn't even remember it. And I told him I'd send it to him, but this was when I was having a surge of work a year or so ago, which then, see, I teach full-time, and then I've got family responsibilities and so forth, and so that the work is sporadic. I did have I've had 3 sabbaticals that I've worked on this month. The last sabbatical, I didn't ask for to work on this. I asked for something entirely different. Because I figured they wouldn't give me a third sabbatical. They'd say, what have you been doing for all these years? And so they gave me the sabbatical to do something with the radio work I've been doing with kids, which started here at the university and then continued down in Illinois. But then that was right after I'd gotten the sabbatical, was when Northwestern said they wanted the book. So of course I scrapped totally what I was going to do and worked on the book all fall of 1 year ago fall, I was working on this. And I had to send in my report, and so I sent in my sabbatical report and said I didn't do at all what I said I was going to do. Here's what I've done, but you know, they're going to get a book out of it, Sangamon State, and that makes them happy. So there's no problem there. But I was answering something else. That I called Woodard, but then I never got it sent to him.
The ring bell at all, John?
No, I never saw it before.
Funny, isn't it?
I should remember, but we talked about the distribution department cannot participate in contests when it originated out of there. Maybe John Chris might know.
It's the sort of thing my father could write, but he didn't do it. But it was in my folders where I'd been collecting ABS stuff for years.
Did you want to take these, John, so you have a chance to look at them, the rest of them?
Let's see, here was where Peterson got there.
And your story about dear sweet Billy Biddle was just a touching story. John hasn't seen that one.
John hasn't seen it. You've given him the story.
I just gave him the one you sent to me so that he can have a chance to read.
Okay, fine. Yeah, well, he was a beautiful young man.
Yeah.
Everybody says I had good taste. And he was so nice to me, you know. I was just a little kid trotting around behind him there in the barn.
Yeah.
And I thought it interesting that this 1953 article chose Iowa to write out. And then it turned out to be the Rock County that had the first frozen semen test. And so the UPS is being quoted here with Dr. Henry Dunn, all in there. Just for the UPS. And then it comes through. Let's see what else is in here.
Let's see the top of that. Which Peterson was this? Did you mention?
Oh, this is Carol Peterson.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I don't think I knew him. Let's see.
Do you remember him? I don't remember. I don't know that I knew him.
Name's familiar, but I'm in trouble.
I remember Carl Peterson, but that's a different one.
Yeah. I'm sure I've seen him, but I can't recall him.
This is a 1930 talk of my father, where he's talking about the Mount Hope. I owe a great deal to the Mount Hope Farm, Williamstown. I just came on this recently amongst, as I've been going through old stuff, because I knew I had more, so I may incorporate a little of that. And this is another talk that he gave based on Parmalee Prentice's, the work about famine and all that. Here's two bits out of letters that had to do with ABS. If you'd like to keep the stories, I have another set of the stories that I could give to
John. Well, John, I can share
John.
That.
Okay.
No, that's fine.
I'll call Bushner and ask him about permissions.
Well, do you think that's necessary, John? Would he is right to say so?
I think what I could do is give a credit to various information.
I think you'd just find out how he handled it.
Okay. That's
how did he handle it? Because he quotes things, too.
Yes, he does.
No, that's fair enough.
How did he handle it? And I've got his number in Cape Cod. And I think I will give Dr. Bartlett a call just to say hello, and especially if he turns out to be Dobie's friend. And I'm not sure what questions I have to ask him at this point, seeing as how we figured out that bit about the... About the drainage.
Do you have his Hawaiian phone?
Somebody gave it to me here somewhere.
Fine.
Either Phil or Steve Jan or somebody. I've got a thing here of ABS stuff. Anyway, I just noticed I did have it.
Okay, you may want to check him after read it.
And I can check it.
Read that material. Presentation he made at the NAB that he gave you there.
You've given me Where did I took it, right?
Yes, I did.
And I marked it. Let's see, here's this, here's this, here's this, let me find it and be sure I have it.
Put it underneath the...
Thought it was here.
This doesn't look like, that's one of my pages. Did I put it underneath this? This is all Bob Walton's stuff.
Yeah, I think maybe you might have put it under there, under his.
Let's see, oh, there it is.
Right there.
Okay, this, you suggest that I might want to call Bartlett after this?
Well, read it first.
Read it first, and it might help, you know, raise some questions you might want to ask him.
Mm-hmm, is he in Hawaii for weeks or months, or?
For the winter.
For the winter, yeah.
About April, when he come back, something like that.
First of April.
Yeah, well, my editor may say, as he's been saying right along, do it right, which is wonderful to have an editor, do it right, Jackie, do it right. And so I'm hoping that he'll continue with that, although I do want to get him something by the middle of this month, but I think I'll tell him that the ABS stuff, I'm not going to have time before school begins to get all this digested and worked in, but I should be able to get quite a bit, because I'll go home now and I've got till the 17th before school begins, so that ought to, as my daughter says, don't let anybody know you're in town.
What other children do you have besides the daughters that are with LeBron?
I've got four daughters.
Uh-huh.
And the eldest is being retooled. They grew up in the wrong decade. I'll turn this off for a moment.
Just
talk about Waldorf
school. Just wonderful the way our little granddaughter is responding to all that. I mean, she lives on a farm. She loves animals, but so it's a natural for her. But it just keeps expanding on that, and everything we read about that school has been just remarkable. I just
and this is at Viroqua, right?
Viroqua, yes.
Well, Demi was impressed with it, and they aren't terrible. There are some criticisms. For instance, they aren't terribly concerned of the kids learning to read right off on that kind of schedule that the public schools have and so forth. And so there's been criticism that if somebody is going to have a reading problem, it doesn't get detected early enough. But they go in for live music, for instance. They don't have records of things like that. They make music, and they have people come in and do music, and then it's more a hands-on sort of thing. And they emphasize the arts and storytelling and movement and dance and all these things that Demi is good at and loves to do, and she loves little children.
Well, apparently, from what I read now about the school, it's been there several years, but at the beginning, it was not very well accepted because the people around there thought they were a bunch of hippies.
Mm-hmm.
But they've established themselves, and the kids love it, and a lot of people have moved there now, so their kids can go to this school.
Ah.
And they've become an economic force there because people move there, just so their kids can go to this school.
Mm-hmm. See, now it's gone, what I was going to say about it. Oh, it has tremendous parental support.
Yes.
The schools do.
Yeah.
And working with the teachers and so forth. And at the moment, if you were a first grade teacher, then you move up with your class.
Yes.
And keep moving up. Now they're talking about having that stop at fifth grade and have one teacher fifth through eighth. Fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, rather than having the same teacher all the way from first to eighth. The kindergarten teacher stays with the kindergartners. And Demi had her choice, you know, is she going to take the elementary training or is she going to take the kindergarten training? And she's decided on the kindergarten training, and she's finding the whole first year was down the drain almost, and she nearly didn't go back, except I said, well, then what are you going to do? I'm going to cut off finances because it's getting, you know, to the end. And so she almost went back because she said, well, what else will I do? But the whole first year, they're giving them all this Rudolf Steiner philosophy. And they're having classes on this and that and the other thing. And she said, you never see the kids and you don't learn anything about teaching methods. And it's all coming now. And
now, that's the first time I heard about Rudolf Steiner, so I didn't know what he had to do with it.
Is a grandchild of yours?
Yes.
Ask your son or daughter? Anyway, the parents, ask them what relationship they see with Rudolf Steiner.
Okay.
because I'd be interested to know how much of that comes through to the parents. It's basically a very good philosophy, except he's way off in, well, if you've got any sort of scientific upbringing, you know, you get tired of the Archangel Michael and you get tired of all the mysticism that I went to a class with Demi. I went out there for, they only allow you to stay for 3 days because they don't like you to disturb the school. And it's a wonderful little campus. It's like a little English village with buildings around and so forth. And then they've got, at the break, they have all this good food, you know, wholesome things and so forth. The meals are just marvelous. And it's a lovely little community. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But I went to her various classes, and I loved the music class, and I loved the art class, and so forth. And then we went to the planetary science class. And she said, Mom, she said, you're going to have trouble with this one, because I do too. And I said, well, Demi, I said, I trust you're doing what I've told you right from the start, which is to take everything metaphorically. And she said, well, that's what she's doing. But by the end of the year, she was saying it was pretty hard to make everything metaphoric. She was getting...